In the quaint town of Knockemout, where everyone knows your business and gossip travels faster than wildfire, a wounded police chief and a secretive insurance investigator find themselves on a collision course that will change both their lives forever. Things We Hide from the Light by Lucy Score has captivated readers worldwide since its release, spending weeks on the New York Times bestseller list and garnering praise from celebrities like Reese Witherspoon, who called it the perfect blend of small-town charm and sizzling romance. This follow-up to Score's breakout hit, Things We Never Got Over, delves deeper into themes of vulnerability, trust, and the courage it takes to let someone see your darkest places. As TikTok's hashtag BookTok community has demonstrated with millions of views, Nash and Lena's story resonates because it speaks to our universal fear. Is loving someone worth the risk of devastating pain? Nash Morgan, Knockemout's respected police chief, is going through the motions of living without actually feeling alive. Shot twice by Duncan Hubo in an incident that remains frustratingly fragmented in his memory, Nash has physically recovered, according to his doctors, but remains emotionally hollow. The federal agents who keep appearing in his office want him to back off investigating Hugo, a request that would have once ignited his famous determination, but now barely registers. His usually sharp instincts feel dulled, his passionate pursuit of justice reduced to mechanical routine. The physical scars have healed, leaving behind two puckered marks that pull when he moves, but it's the invisible wounds that refuse to mend. Even fall, his favorite season, failed to spark joy, as Nash notices the changing leaves without experiencing his usual appreciation for the way the mountains seem to catch fire with autumn colors. The crisp morning air that once energized him now just feels cold. His colleagues at the station walk on eggshells around him, their careful questions and concerned glances treating him with kid gloves that only serve to irritate him further. The once passionate and dedicated officer now feels nothing but a yawning chasm of emptiness in his chest where emotion used to live. His daily routine has become a carefully choreographed performance. Wake up, coffee, work, home, repeat. Executed with mechanical precision, but devoid of meaning. The shooting changed more than just his body. It altered his entire perception of the world. Colors seem muted, food tastes bland, and even his beloved morning runs feel like obligations rather than opportunities for clarity. When Nash encounters his new neighbor, Lena Solovita, moving in next door, coincidentally, his brother Knox's ex-girlfriend, something unexpected happens. Despite his physical pain from helping carry a heavy box upstairs, the interaction stirs tiny little embers in Nash's emotional wasteland. Their charged exchange, filled with awkward pauses and unspoken tension, becomes the first spark of anything he's felt in weeks, a lifeline in his sea of numbness. Her direct gaze and refusal to treat him like damaged goods creates the first crack in his carefully maintained facade. What makes Nash's struggle so compelling is how it reflects our own experiences with trauma and emotional numbness. When life delivers a devastating blow, we often find ourselves going through the motions, present in body but absent in spirit. His struggle mirrors the universal experience of trying to rebuild after everything familiar has been stripped away. Nash's journey reminds us that healing isn't linear. It comes in unexpected moments and through unexpected people who somehow manage to pierce through our carefully constructed armor. His story speaks to anyone who has ever felt disconnected from their own life, searching for a way back to feeling whole. Lena Solovita's presence in Knockemout is anything but coincidental. As a top-tier insurance investigator with an impressive 92% recovery rate and a knack for cracking impossible cases, she's pursuing a rare 1948 Porsche 356 convertible, one of only 442 ever manufactured. The classic car, valued at $500,000, was masterfully stolen by Duncan Hugo, the same man who put a bullet in Nash Morgan before vanishing without a trace. Despite her professional determination to maintain emotional distance, Lena finds herself increasingly drawn to her wounded, broody neighbor, creating an internal conflict between her duty and her growing feelings. The precarious balance of her undercover operation faces its first serious threat during what should have been a routine housewarming visit. 12-year-old Waylay, displaying the characteristic curiosity of a preteen, nearly stumbles upon Lena's meticulously compiled dossier on Duncan Hugo while rifling through her belongings. This close call forces Lena to become even more vigilant about protecting her true identity while simultaneously deepening her involvement in Knockamout's tight-knit community, a place she never intended to put down roots. The investigation's pivotal breakthrough arrives through an unexpectedly mundane source, candy. During a routine shopping trip with Waylay at Mason's Market, Lena spots a distinctive bag of sun-kissed fruit gems. The sight triggers her photographic memory, connecting these specific candy wrappers to crime scene photographs from the abandoned warehouse where Hugo was last spotted. This seemingly trivial detail, overlooked by local law enforcement and federal investigators alike, becomes the crucial evidence that begins to unravel the entire case. The candy connection exemplifies how truth often conceals itself in everyday details. While investigators had been focusing on security footage, witness statements, and traditional evidence, the key to the case had been sitting on convenience store shelves all along. Lena's ability to make this connection showcases her exceptional observational skills and demonstrates how crucial details often hide in plain sight. This breakthrough, however, comes with dangerous consequences. It leads to a tense confrontation with a suspicious character dubbed Cereal Aisle Guy, a man who's been quietly observing Lena and turns out to be Hugo's accomplice. The discovery transforms Lena from hunter to hunted, dramatically escalating the stakes. She finds herself forced to rely on Nash, Knox, and other Knockamout residents she's been trying to keep at a professional distance, revealing how her carefully constructed walls are crumbling just when she needs allies the most. The situation becomes further complicated when Lena discovers that Hugo's theft of the Porsche might be connected to a larger criminal enterprise operating within Knockamout's borders, suggesting that her presence in town could be more than just coincidental timing. Both Nash and Lina carry deep wounds that have shaped their approach to relationships. Nash's trauma stems not only from being shot, but from childhood, growing up with an alcoholic father who chose addiction over family after Nash's mother died. Lina's caution comes from a near-death experience at 15 when she went into cardiac arrest during a soccer game due to a heart valve defect, requiring extensive hospitalization and valve replacement surgery. Their individual responses to trauma manifest in opposite ways. Nash withdraws emotionally, while Lina avoids putting down roots or forming attachments. When panic attacks leave Nash feeling weak and helpless, it's Lina who knows exactly what to do, dimming lights, putting on music, applying frozen broccoli to stimulate his vagus nerve, and making relaxation tea. Her expertise comes from her own history with panic attacks during 18 months of medical treatment. In one of the novel's most powerful scenes, Nash confesses to Lina, "Every time I'm near you, every time you laugh or look at me or get pissed off, I feel something." After months of emotional numbness, this awakening terrifies and exhilarates him. He proposes they become bed buddies with strict conditions: no sex, no snuggling, and complete secrecy. Of course, these boundaries quickly dissolve as they find themselves gravitating toward each other during sleep. When Nash asks why Lina pushes people away, she eventually reveals her heart condition, explaining how it led to overprotective parents and a suffocating half-life until she came to Knockamout. This exchange highlights the novel's central theme: true strength isn't found in isolation, but in the courage to be vulnerable. As bartender Joel wisely observes, being vulnerable doesn't mean you're weak. It means you trust yourself to be strong enough to handle the hurt. This insight resonates beyond the page, challenging readers to reconsider how they protect themselves from potential pain at the cost of potential connection. Knockamout isn't just a setting, it's a living, breathing character that shapes the story's emotional core. This small Virginia town embodies the double-edged sword of close-knit community life, where privacy is scarce, but support is abundant. The town's personality emerges through its eccentric residents, each adding depth to the tapestry of small-town life. Mrs. Tweedy, Nash's elderly neighbor, stands out with her unfiltered commentary and persistent demands for help with everyday tasks, from fixing her ancient pocket watch to installing a shower curtain that perpetually refuses to stay up. She dubs Nash Studley Do-Right and becomes an unlikely source of wisdom wrapped in sass. The supporting cast extends beyond Mrs. Tweedy to include Sloane, the librarian, whose careful composure masks a past she's trying to outrun, and a spirited group of senior citizens who transform their morning workout sessions into social events. These seniors adopt Lena into their circle, offering not just exercise tips, but life advice seasoned with years of small-town experience. Their weekly gatherings at the community center become a touchstone of stability in Lena's uncertain world. When crisis strikes and Lena is kidnapped, the town's true character emerges in full force. Young Waylay, despite his fear, manages to memorize part of the kidnapper's license plate, a detail that proves crucial. Knox demonstrates leadership by coordinating family safety measures, while his grandmother, Liza J., a force of nature in her own right, proves that age is no barrier to heroism when she rams her store scooter into the kidnapper's vehicle. The incident reveals how deeply interconnected the townspeople have become, with information and support flowing through networks built over generations. The town's personality shines through in uniquely knock-em-out traditions and quirks. Honky Tonk's infamous Shark Week, when the female staff's synchronized menstrual cycles prompt special warning signs for customers, becomes less about biological timing and more about feminine solidarity. When troublemakers harass the staff, the response is immediate and unified. Regular patrons, other staff members, and even first-time visitors band together, demonstrating how quickly Knockemout absorbs newcomers into its protective embrace. These instances of community support contrast sharply with Nash and Lena's initial attempts to maintain emotional distance. Through their gradual integration into town life, from morning coffee runs at the local diner to becoming regulars at community events, they discover that true strength often lies in vulnerability and connection. Knox's advice to Lena about the risks of emotional investment resonates beyond their relationship to encompass the broader theme of community belonging. It's worth everything. If you're not scared shitless, you're doing it wrong. The Portrait of Knockemout offers a nuanced view of small-town life that acknowledges both its challenges and rewards. The lack of privacy, the speed of gossip, and the weight of history can feel suffocating. Yet, these same characteristics create an environment where genuine connection flourishes. In an era where digital interaction often replaces face-to-face community, Knockemout serves as a reminder that meaningful relationships require risk, engagement, and the courage to be known, flaws and all. One of the novel's most touching subplots involves Nash's rescue of a filthy, trembling dog trapped in a drainage pipe during a rainstorm. The scene powerfully mirrors Nash's own trapped emotional state, both physically and metaphorically stuck in dark, confining spaces. Despite his initial reluctance to take responsibility for the animal, Nash finds himself becoming attached to Piper, who becomes both a symbol of his healing capacity and a bridge between him and Lena. The dog's gradual transformation from a terrified, defensive creature to a loving companion parallels Nash's own journey toward emotional recovery. Their first real connection forms while bathing the dog in Nash's bathroom, a domestic scene that creates undeniable tension as they work together, laughing and getting soaked in the process. The intimacy of the moment, with soap suds flying and Piper shaking water everywhere, breaks down their carefully maintained barriers. This seemingly simple task becomes a catalyst for deeper connection, as they share stories and memories while tending to the dog. The physical proximity and shared purpose create a natural ease between them that neither could achieve through conventional interaction. When Nash pushes Lena away during an emotional crisis triggered by memories of his combat experience, he returns home to find she's left adoption papers for Piper, understanding that his connection with the dog represents an important step in his recovery. This gesture demonstrates her deep understanding of how healing often requires indirect approaches. Sometimes it's easier to love a dog than to face our own wounds directly. Similarly, Nash helps Lena reconnect with physical activity after her heart surgery, leaving her fearful of exertion. He creates a graduated exercise program, starting with gentle walks with Piper that gradually increase in duration and intensity. When she takes him skydiving, despite his terror of jumping from a perfectly good airplane, Nash experiences a profound moment of clarity. In the peaceful silence after the parachute opens, I realize Lena isn't just helping me avoid the world, she's reintroducing me to it. This moment becomes a metaphor for their entire relationship, facing fears together and finding peace in the freefall. These mutual acts of healing demonstrate how the right relationship doesn't just accept our broken parts, but actively helps restore them. Nash and Lena each provide what the other needs most. For Nash, it's feeling something again, beyond the numbness of trauma. For Lena, it's finding stability without suffocation. Their relationship shows how healing can be reciprocal, each person's growth supporting and encouraging the others. The novel suggests that healing often comes sideways, not through direct confrontation of our trauma, but through new experiences that gradually rebuild our capacity for joy and connection. Through small moments like dog baths and larger challenges like skydiving, Nash and Lena create a safe space for vulnerability and growth. This perspective offers hope to readers dealing with their own wounds, suggesting that healing doesn't always require professional intervention, but sometimes arrives through unexpected relationships and experiences that gently guide us back to ourselves. As police chief, Nash has always seen the world in black and white, right and wrong, legal and illegal. His rigid moral code, shaped by 20 years in law enforcement and a military background, initially clashes with Lena's more flexible approach to rules and boundaries. When he discovers she's been investigating Duncan Hugo without telling him, Nash feels deeply betrayed, accusing her of manipulating his vulnerability to gain access to police files. The revelation shakes not only his trust in Lena, but his fundamental belief in clear-cut justice. This conflict forces Nash to reconsider his absolutist thinking through several challenging situations. Working with Grimm, a motorcycle club leader with a criminal past who provides crucial intelligence about Hugo's whereabouts, challenges Nash's professional boundaries. The alliance proves particularly difficult when Grimm's information comes from illegal sources, yet proves essential to preventing future crimes. Similarly, when Nash learns his officer Tate Dilton has been racially profiling drivers and abusing his authority, he must confront corruption within his own department, a situation complicated by Dilton's otherwise exemplary record and close friendship with Nash's family. The novel doesn't suggest moral relativism, but rather a more nuanced understanding of justice and ethics. Through a series of increasingly complex decisions, including whether to use questionable evidence to stop a dangerous criminal and how to handle officers who bend rules for seemingly good reasons, Nash eventually acknowledges that protecting those he loves might require stepping across the line between black and white into gray. This evolution represents personal growth rather than moral compromise, as Nash learns to distinguish between the letter and the spirit of the law. For Lena, who has always operated in gray areas as an investigator, the challenge is different, learning to trust authority figures and systems she's previously circumvented. Her background investigating cold cases has taught her that official channels often fail victims, leading to her tendency to work around rather than through the system. When Nash and his team develop a plan to lure Hugo out of hiding, Lena insists that everyone affected deserves to know the details, bringing transparency to what might otherwise have been a secretive operation. This represents her own growth toward finding balance between independent action and institutional cooperation. Their complementary growth creates a balance where each learns from the other without abandoning their core values. Nash maintains his commitment to justice while developing greater flexibility in its pursuit, while Lena preserves her determination to help victims while learning to work within established systems. This nuanced approach to moral development avoids the common romance trope where one character must fundamentally change to accommodate the relationship, instead showing how healthy partnerships can expand rather than restrict our perspectives. Through their relationship, both characters discover that ethical behavior often requires navigating complex situations with wisdom rather than adhering to rigid rules. The physical attraction between Nash and Lena serves as more than just romantic tension. It becomes a powerful metaphor for Nash's return to living fully after years of emotional dormancy. Their first kiss in the darkened library break room is described as inevitable, the culmination of weeks of tension and denial. The scene unfolds with deliberate pacing, each moment weighted with significance as Nash notices details he'd stopped seeing elsewhere. The soft catch in Lena's breath, the warmth radiating from her skin, the subtle scent of her shampoo that makes him feel anchored in the present moment. "I'm no longer cold inside, but an inferno of need," Nash reflects during their first intimate encounter. After months of feeling nothing, surviving rather than living, this intensity represents a vital reconnection with his capacity for passion. The novel carefully tracks his awakening through physical sensations, the quickening of his pulse when Lena enters a room, the heightened awareness of his own body, the return of appetite, and the ability to taste food fully again. When they go on their first official date, their physical connection in the restaurant becomes an affirmation of life rather than merely pleasure. Small moments take on profound meaning, their knees touching under the table, fingers brushing while reaching for bread, the electric current that seems to pass between them during eye contact. These instances of connection ripple through Nash's emotional numbness, creating cracks in his carefully constructed walls. The novel handles intimate scenes with a masterful balance of explicit detail and emotional significance, showing how physical intimacy can be healing rather than merely recreational. Each encounter peels back another layer of defensive isolation, revealing vulnerable truths about both characters. For Lena, who has kept people at a distance since her heart surgery, allowing Nash close represents a reclamation of her body's capabilities despite its medical history. The surgical scar she initially hides becomes a symbol of survival and strength when Nash kisses it with reverence. This approach to passion challenges our culture's tendency to either sanitize or commodify sexuality. Instead, the novel presents physical connection as an integral part of human experience that, when approached with authenticity and mutual care, can facilitate deeper emotional healing. The author demonstrates how touch can communicate what words cannot, how skin-to-skin contact can ground someone in their body when grief has made them feel disconnected, and how desire can reignite a will to live that trauma has dimmed. Through Nash and Lena's developing relationship, we see how physical intimacy, when combined with emotional vulnerability, creates a unique space for transformation. Their passion becomes a force for renewal, proving that the body's wisdom can sometimes lead the way when the mind is lost in grief or fear. In the novel's climactic sequence, Nash proposes to Lena during a gunfight, a moment that perfectly encapsulates their relationship's intensity and unconventionality. Despite bullets flying and lives in danger, Nash recognizes that some truths can't wait for perfect circumstances. Lena's acceptance, delivered with characteristic sass even as they take cover behind a tractor, confirms that she's finally ready to commit rather than run. The epilogue at Knox and Naomi's wedding brings the themes of family, community, and chosen vulnerability full circle. Nash's father, Duke, makes a rare appearance, sober and attempting reconciliation. The ceremony itself becomes a testament to emotional authenticity, with tough guy Knox reduced to tears, and young Waylay finally admitting she loves her uncle and stuff. When Lena panics about their future with real estate and marriage and babies, Nash assures her none of it scares him as long as she's by his side. This exchange captures the novel's central message: love doesn't eliminate fear, but provides the courage to face it together. As Lucy Score writes in her note to readers, "The more I write romance novels, the more I believe loving someone is our bravest act." This sentiment elevates the story beyond genre conventions to a profound meditation on human connection. Loving someone exactly as they are, with all their trauma, defense mechanisms, and imperfections, is indeed the greatest gift possible. Nash and Lena's journey reminds us that while protecting ourselves from pain might seem like self-preservation, it actually diminishes our capacity for joy. True living requires risk, the willingness to step out of a perfectly good airplane and trust that the view will be worth the terror of the fall. In a world increasingly characterized by disconnection and self-protective isolation, Things We Hide from the Light offers a compelling argument for choosing connection despite its inherent vulnerabilities. As Knox wisely observes, if you're not scared shitless, you're doing it wrong. Perhaps that's the most important lesson of all, that the things most worth having are precisely the ones that terrify us most.